The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks, guys. We are live today from Inner Tribe. We're doing this, crossing this. I'm actually in Toronto. The guys are in Boston. We've had a week of fun at Cybos. This has been a huge conference. We've had innovators, startup, venture capitalists. What we did is we put together a whole bunch of really interesting interviews, and we're excited to sort of bring you this inside look at Cybos and what's happening in terms of pushing the limits of the financial industry. So right now I'd like to cross to the first interview we covered off at Inner Tribe this week to talk about what Inner Tribe is and what's happening with this disruptive startup set and this fintech movement from within traditional banking. Here's the first interview. Hi, we're here at Cybos, and so obviously it's a big event for us. It was the largest financial services conference in the world by many metrics in Boston this week. A lot of things happening. At this point, let's introduce you to Fabien van der Rijt. And Fabien is the head of market management and also the lead for Inner Tribe here, or the head of Inner Tribe here at Cybos. Inner Tribe is the largest sort of subgroup within the Cybos event. And we opened to this massive event on Monday at Cybos. Fabien, welcome to the Breaking Banks radio show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So tell us about Inner Tribe for those that aren't familiar with it. I mean, we're a fintech radio show, so I think most people know it. But what's Inner Tribe's theme this year at Cybos?
The team this year is building bridges, and for those of you who had the chance to be here physically, we actually have real bridges in the room, quite an amazing design. So the team is getting the banking community and the startup closer by building bridges at various levels.
There's been a bit of a running dialogue from the Inner Tribe team over the last few years that Inner Tribe is becoming such an essential part of Cybos. In fact, if we look back over the Cybos alumni, those that have launched, we had Circle launch here on Monday, and we interviewed Jeremy about that, and he's going to be on the show later. But we've also seen Simple and Movin and Fedor Bank and all of these household names in the fintech community, they've all been at Inner Tribe. So is Inner Tribe starting to become something more than this sub part of the conference? Is this becoming this hub of the fintech world?
Well, that's the idea. The idea is leveraging Cybos, where most bankers attend, to expose them to all the great work that we've done. I mean, so far 600 startups have gone through the program with the one you've just mentioned. And I think if I look at who attended yesterday, there were many more bankers than ever. So I think these bridges are starting to happen. This being said, it takes a while between the moment you win the startup competition and you become mainstream. So I think that this time gap is something we try to reduce, obviously.
How long before it is mainstream and Inner Tribe and our innovation themes that we have and so forth just become on the main stage at Cybos?
Well, actually, if you think about it, for those who, again, didn't have the chance to attend our CEO's opening plenary, the big title was disruption. So I think implicitly everything that is being discussed here is also feeding into the main program. We have a change day as well, which we didn't have before. We have an Inner Tribe alumni stand, which was something, if we would have thought of doing that 5 years ago, it was really not possible. Now it's possible. So step by step, it's becoming more tightly coupled, let's say, with the mainstream.
And in the off season, when we're not here at Cybos, what is Inner Tribe doing to move the fintech movement along in other parts of the world?
Well, first, we also help Swift product managers and market managers to look differently at the ecosystem. That's why my role is actually building bridges within Swift as well, because I combine market management and InnoTribe. And then we're pretty busy, attracting those startups to the program and running challenges, competitions with the startup. We did London, New York, Singapore this year. Next year, we'll do that plus others. We'll talk about that maybe later this week.
So tell us about the week at InnoTribe and what we've got planned in terms of the sessions.
Day one is about cryptocurrency. So looking at what is cryptocurrency, informing bankers about what it is and what can do, what can the industry do with it, what are the implications of that technology and specifically the blockchain. Day two is about network effects and platform economics. What does it mean for banks and for startups? Day three is the climax of the week in a way, because that's the final of the startup competition where the best 15 startups will be competing for the grand prize. And the last day will be about all the accelerators and institutions that help startups grow and expose them to bank, talking together as a federation and explaining what they can do to advance innovation with banks.
Fabien, thank you for joining us on Breaking Banks, and good luck with InnoTribe this week.
Thank you, Brett. Pleasure.
We're here with Peter Hinson, the author of a new book that's due out the second half of the year called The Network Always Wins. Peter just presented this morning at InnoTribe. Peter, give us your thoughts on the session this morning around Bitcoin and also the feedback you gave us on regulation of new innovations like 23andMe.
Sure, more than happy to. I think the discussion around Bitcoin and the whole blockchain seems a little absurd because many banks here in the audience are terrified by it. And the reason is that they didn't come up with it themselves. I use the analogy, it really reminds me of the whole TCP/IP discussion where all the telecom engineers and the traditional telecom players hated TCP/IP because they didn't invent it. And they weren't in control and there was no boss. And if you look at the internet today, I mean, there's no way that they should have dissed it, but they did. And I think the role of the regulators is really interesting. What you now see is that many of the regulators, I think, are running behind the facts. The analogy I really like to make is what's happening in healthcare at this moment, where a company like 23andMe is a brilliant company that is really revolutionizing our insight into DNA. They were shut down by the FDA in December of last year. And the reason they were shut down is not because of the quality of the test, they were brilliant, but because they said, this is too disruptive for the healthcare ecosystem. We can't trust people with that kind of technology. And the whole result is that the FDA has pushed it into the illegal because people can still do their DNA profile. And instead of doing it legally on 23andMe, they're uploading it on some Latin American server where they can, for $5, get the same advice. And I think that's what is happening in the whole cryptocurrency. There is so much ignorance and I think so much fear in banking and banking regulators that I think they're about to have a TCP/IP moment if they're not careful.
So do you think that the blockchain is this key innovation we should be watching for? That's what's going to really lead Bitcoin to new heights?
I think, honestly, I mean, if you look at the relation of blockchain and Bitcoin, I think blockchain is TCP/IP, and Bitcoin may be Grumpy Cat. I mean, I think that is probably a strange analogy, but you know, people are dissing Bitcoin because it is sometimes weird and silly, and some of the extravagances are, you know, out of bounds. But if you look at blockchain, that is a fundamental new way to think about transactions and about trust. And I think that is the fundament that people should be looking at. So if you're interested in cryptocurrency, look at blockchain. Don't just look at Bitcoin.
So this leads us as a segue to your new book, The Network Always Wins, that comes out in the second half of the year. Tell us a little bit about what we're in store for with the new book.
Sure, more than happy to. I wrote a book previously called The New Normal about what happens when technology becomes normal. And as any author, you hope your book's going to last some time, and it didn't, because it became a normality sooner than everybody could imagine. And I started thinking, what happens when, you know, you pass that point? What happens when technology becomes normal? Because then technology isn't a differentiator anymore. This is what you see with banks. Everybody now has online banking and mobile banking. Technology is no longer a competitive advantage. So I started thinking about what is the next phase. And for me, the next phase is the network effects. And I think three things are essential. First of all, markets as we know them will disappear and become networks of information. So that means that your traditional linear ways of thinking about marketing are going to be completely useless in an age where it's about networks of intelligence with the consumer at the heart. The second thing, and this is the most challenging, big companies are still run on traditional hierarchies that came from the industrial age. And in an age where the outside world becomes a network, I think companies will have to become networks if they want to survive. And the third element, I think it's the most dangerous one, is, you know, technology as a result of these networks get a wave, a propagation wave, and a speed of innovation that is completely something we've never seen before. The networks propagate innovation faster than ever before. And that's what we see happening. Silicon Valley is not Silicon Valley anymore. Silicon Valley is really becoming a hotbed for disruptive innovators, not just for disruptive tech companies. And I think this disruptive force of innovation is something that we have to take really, really seriously.
Peter Hinson, speaker, entrepreneur, best-selling author, thank you for joining Breaking Banks today.
It was a pleasure. See you soon.
So day one is all about cryptocurrencies, as Peter said. But next up, what we'd like to do is talk to Jeremy Allaire from Circle, who did the live launch of Circle at InnoTribe this year. Jeremy, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thanks, Brett. It's my pleasure.
You launched formally at InnoTribe, which is a great platform for the launch of many new disruptive financial services companies. Tell us about Circle and about the launch and what it means for you guys moving forward.
Sure, absolutely. So Circle is a company that Sean Neville and I founded about 15 or 18 months ago, really as the vision of being an internet-based consumer finance company. Built entirely on digital platforms, in particular on top of digital currency. The launch we had yesterday was our public launch, generally available to anyone in the world. Users can use Circle to convert local currency into digital currency, store that with us in a highly secure manner, as well as use applications for instant person-to-person or person-to-merchant transactions that use the Bitcoin network to process those transactions. So it's sort of instant, global, secure, and free transactions is the kind of model. And we're really focused on consumers and helping the consumer side of this emerging ecosystem take hold.
You also allow people to move money in and out of their U.S.-based bank accounts?
Yeah, so we support U.S.-based linked bank accounts, so ACH-linked U.S. bank accounts. And then we support credit cards and debit cards on the MasterCard and Visa networks. And so in any of those, a user can make a deposit, which essentially is converting from dollars to Bitcoin, or a withdrawal, which is converting back from Bitcoin into your local currency.
Great. So now that you've launched, what are your immediate plans over the next few months in terms of projected user growth and your objectives for the business as a whole?
So right now, you know, the market for digital currency for consumers is extremely nascent. You know, there's a wave of users who came into the market over the last year, and I would characterize those not as consumers, but as retail investors. And, you know, I'd say 90% of the users that are out there bought some Bitcoin, have some Bitcoin, think it's interesting, but they're not actually benefiting from its, you know, potential utility value. So over the next few months, obviously, we want early adopters to use Circle. It's an important and influential audience, but we're trying to walk that line of building a product for the kind of early adopters, but also building a product for mainstream users. And so a lot of our focus is really going to be on what are incremental improvements we can make to Circle that continue to make it more interesting for a mainstream consumer. How do we enhance the real utility value of Bitcoin for transactions? So that's a lot of the focus.
That seems to be the biggest issue right now, is that we're not getting enough people spending their Bitcoins. They're tending to hoard it like a commodity. So what do you think will enable us to really accelerate the number of transactions per day on Bitcoin?
You know, I think there are, you know, there's several use cases that people talk about. There's the person-to-merchant, there's the person-to-person, and then, you know, what I would call world remittance, global remittance, which is also person-to-person at the end of the day. I think that fundamental blocker on the consumer side is price volatility. It's really hard to talk to the average person on the street and say, hey, you can convert your, you know, money that you have in your bank into this digital currency, and by the way, it might be worth 5 or 10% less tomorrow. It might be worth more. I don't really know. So that's difficult. And so that's really a critical problem. That's got to be solved. It's not something one company can solve, but I do believe that there are some tremendous infrastructure-level initiatives underway which will make the underlying trading and pricing mechanics of the exchange ecosystem better support price stability.
Great. Jeremy Allaire, CEO of Circle. Thanks for joining Breaking Banks today.
Thank you, Brett.
Next up, we have Yoni Asai. Yoni is one of the founders of eToro, and they launched the concept of Bitcoin 2.0, or colored coin. One of the interesting things was at InnerTribe and at Swift generally, I think there's been a fairly poor understanding of the real potential behind the blockchain itself. Yoni, what are your thoughts, and tell us a bit more about the colored coin concept.
Well, generally, as a financial institution ourselves, what we realized on the blockchain is the disruptive force of the technology of basically a distributed, trusted database. So, for example, at eToro, we need to hold our database at several locations for disaster recovery. It's actually hard to find out, always to match all of the financial contracts, and that's just internally. And every financial institution actually has the same challenges of maintaining their own data set. The beauty of the blockchain is you can have several financial institutions actually work on the same blockchain, on the same financial ledger, basically, constantly transferring value from one to another without having to wait the 2-3 days today in banking. And I think that's really the disruptive force behind the Bitcoin technology or the blockchain technology, is to enable people to transfer value seamlessly over the internet, over the World Wide Web.
So Yoni, you also demonstrated, which I thought was really cool, the real-time creation of a Swift coin on the colored coins construct at InnerTribe today. Tell us about how that works for people who weren't at InnerTribe.
So basically all you do is you take, for example, one Bitcoin. So and every Bitcoin has 100 million Satoshis, right? So you can take one Bitcoin and you can say this Bitcoin now represents, let's say, 100,000 Swift coins. Now you color this Bitcoin and you say every part of this Bitcoin now represent X amount of Swift coins. Now all you need to do is once you define that and then publish it over the web, you can start giving away or selling those Swift coins, and any person transferring Swift coins from one to another can actually look at the public ledger and see that they're transferring Swift coins rather than just Bitcoins.
Great. Yoni Assia from eToro. Thanks for joining Breaking Banks today.
Thank you very much.
Let's have a quick break and a word from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back to you live from InnerTribe.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin, a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's M-O-V-E-N.com.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficiency for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking, with features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance. Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit Kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I am your host, Brett King. We are live from InnerTribe this week.
I'm with Uday Goyal. Uday is the managing partner and one of the founders of the Anthemis Group, who's heavily involved in the InnerTribe scene this year, but also has had a number of his portfolio companies present at InnerTribe in the past and also present this year. Uday, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you, Brett. Nice to see you yet again at InnerTribe this year. It's been a great packed program, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's always good to see familiar faces year after year.
One of the things that's interesting is if we look around on the global landscape today in terms of companies like Fedor and others that have been talked about a lot at the event, our own company Movin launched here, Circle launched yesterday. InnerTribe seems to have this magic formula. If you look at all the disruption taking place in financial services, a lot of them are InnerTribe alumni. So what is it about InnerTribe that attracts these disruptive startups who are changing the world of banking?
So I think, you know, one of the themes for InnerTribe this year, as you saw, is sort of bridging the gap or acting as the bridge. And I think that's exactly the reason why companies have been successful coming through either InnerTribe or in collaboration with InnerTribe or having something to do with InnerTribe. Because ultimately what InnerTribe does is it bridges the incumbents, which are represented by the thousands of banks that come to Sibos, which is their annual, which is SWIFT's annual event where InnerTribe is present, and the early stage companies who actually need to collaborate with the incumbents. And this concept of the collaboration between incumbents and early stage companies is right at the heart of what we're trying to do at Anthemis as well. And so it's quite an amazing way of bringing these two parties together in a forum where everybody from around the world is represented in one place.
Now, your team is, of course, central to the fintech revolution in many ways. You've funded a lot of portfolio companies who are involved in this. But what was interesting is the InnerTribe opening was the largest attended session apart from the plenary at the opening, which I think says a lot. Is 2014 the year when fintech has become the new normal, as Hinson called it?
Increasingly so, I think. What's been interesting is I've been hosting the Future of Money now, I think, 4 years in a row. We started out with a reasonably full room, and then very rapidly, every year it's got bigger and bigger until the point where it's become standing room only. And what's interesting is I think that the people on the trade floor here who represent all the biggest banks around the world suddenly are realizing that they need to think about the future and think about how disruption is going to affect their businesses. And so that's really attracted them into the InnerTribe space and into thinking about the future of money and thinking about the future of financial services. And in fact, is part of this ongoing revolution that we're starting to see, where finally there's an opportunity to disrupt business models that really haven't changed for such a long time.
So one last thing that you got into the opening session on the future of money. We had Gottfried come in and talk about InnerTribe and its heritage. But one of the things seemed to be some lack of consensus on was things like Bitcoin. Gottfried said it's going to be 10 to 20 years before it likely has impact on SWIFT's business. What are your thoughts in respect to some of these disruptions? You know, is this talk of disruption maybe a bit overrated? Are we really seeing things that are going to fundamentally change the financial ecosystem?
Well, I think we had a whole day of cryptocurrencies yesterday, and I think what's very, very clear is when you look at the technology that underlies cryptocurrencies and the potential it has to change everything from how we think about ownership of assets and general ledgers all the way through to the moving of money from place A to place B, which is effectively SWIFT's core business. I'm a believer that five years is probably longer than what it's going to take. I think we're looking at a change which is going to start gaining momentum over the next few months. And within 18 months to 24 months, we're going to see major institutions embrace some of the underlying technology of cryptocurrency as the protocol to move money around. And that's directly against SWIFT's core business model. So I'm pretty convinced that that disruption is coming a lot quicker than Gottfried thinks it is. Although I do agree with Gottfried that it's not a replacement technology as much as a complementary technology to replace some of the underlying protocols that's used in the transfer of money around the world.
Great. Uday Goyal, managing partner and founder of Anthemis, thanks for joining Breaking Banks.
Thanks very much, Brett. Nice to see you.
So these interviews are extremely interesting. If you guys haven't been at InnoTribe this week, now you're already realizing what you've missed out on. We're here with Jaak Pleta, the founder and CEO, right, of Backbase. So the last 2 weeks, of course, we had a lot of fintech activity. We had Finovate in New York, and we've got InnoTribe here at Sibos. And Backbase has been both of these events. So, Jaak, tell us what's happening with Backbase and your recent launch at Finovate.
Yeah, we introduced our new digital banking solution at Finovate. It's called Engage.
Tell me about Engage and what's different about this from traditional omni-channel, multi-channel approaches to the problem of engagement.
Yeah, so what it does, it basically brings together different modules like PFM, money movement, all modular like Lego blocks, and now the banks can choose. So they're not stuck to a core provider like a one-size-fits-all, but they have flexible choice.
And how is Backbase as an organization growing? You've done pretty well, obviously. You've been sort of a staple of the Bank 2.0 world now for a few years.
Yep.
Tell us about Backbase's progress in the last few months.
We are basically at a tipping point. The company is growing around 70% a year, so that's fast. That's a lot of momentum. Sometimes it's kind of a challenge to manage that growth. But we see a tipping point in almost all regions in the world where first movers or, you know, first followers kind of actually really embark on digital transformation. So, you know, in the early days, it was all evangelism, sure, in our preaching, but now you can really see like medium to larger banks really embarking on very bold strategies, like hundreds of billions, millions in dollar in budget to really transform the bank or the insurance company. And they go out and they have to select something. And we're very fortunate to be selected in many cases from Asia to Middle East to Europe to North America. So that's great.
Which of the regions that you're active in do you think really are taking a more systemic approach, or maybe collectively, that you see is really moving forward more aggressively on this engagement model and next gen banking?
It's very hard to tell because I don't think there's a particular region that goes faster. I think it's more the individual banks that are they either ready or not. So we see kind of this kind of banks that really make a bet, or not even a bet, they make a decision to really go into digital transformation, and it's like a five-year program. We see that happening everywhere, but it kind of varies per, I guess, how much kind of understanding there is at C-level inside the bank to really embark on such a transformation. Basically, the choice is not about, you know, let's do another channel or let's do a mobile app, but it's really let's embark on a full digital omni-channel transformation approach, like a program.
So is that your measure, you think, of a bank that's going to make it through this, that's going to be successful? Someone who, from the C-level down, has made this commitment, set aside specific budget, and is aggressively going after sort of a top-down change towards digital engagement?
Yes, 100%.
Great. Well, that was Jaak Pleta from Backbase. Where can we find out more information about Engage?
You can find it at our website, backbase.com.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks today, Jaak.
All right. Thanks, Brad. Great.
We have with us right now at Sibos InnoTribe in Boston, we have Claire Cockerton. Claire's part of a new initiative sort of born out of Level 39 and some of that activity taking place in the Silicon Roundabout in London. So, Claire, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be with you, Brett.
Tell us about Innovative Finance, this new initiative that you've created in the UK, because we know there's this healthy rivalry between London and New York, who's going to be the fintech center of the world, but you guys have created an initiative there that's sort of trying to get at the heart of fintech in Europe particularly.
Absolutely. Well, it came about from our work at Level 39. So Eric van der Klee and I set up Level 39 a couple years ago. We've been working with fintech entrepreneurs, both disruptors and those who are selling into the banks and working with the banks. And we were asked to map the fintech trends in the UK and talk about how the UK might be able to lead in the sector, but what some of the challenges are we need to overcome. We brought together these entrepreneurs and some of the innovators from the existing institutions, and we talked about what does the UK need to really lead here. It was determined that we needed a new voice for the industry, a new industry organization that could convene the dialogue between the big players, big corporates, and the small little guys. And so we established Innovate Finance at the early part of this year, and it was launched by the Chancellor in August with 54 founding members, with organizations from Swift, IBM, Santander, Visa, Aviva, to some of the earlier stage players who you'll meet through InnoTribe and who we've met at Level 39. But it is an independent organization. It's not backed by government. It's designed by, driven by, and for industry players.
So not backed by government, but you had the Chancellor announce it. This seems like London is taking this whole fintech thing very seriously.
Absolutely. I mean, UK is taking this very seriously. The Chancellor came to our launch and championed the movement. We did not take any government funding, but the Chancellor made some very serious commitments to the industry at our launch, doubling the funding to the British Business Bank, talking about a change in legislation around mandating referrals. If a big corporation denies access to a loan, they need to refer to a smaller alternative finance provider. He's launched a consultation for cryptocurrencies, which is very exciting. And he even demoed an ATM machine, Bitcoin ATM machine, at our launch, as well as other tech. So that's very exciting. But it's really important that we also have engagement with the FCA Project Innovate teams, with other government initiatives like Tech City UK. And we've got wonderful startup funding and support from the City of London and Canary Wharf Group. So we're very grateful for that.
So Claire, just to wrap up, how can people find out about Innovate Finance, and where do we go to join up and be part of the revolution?
Revolution, yes, we call it an evolution. And yes, we do have a call to action. You can look us up at innovatefinance.com. You can get in touch. We've got a wonderful team that will take your queries. And we've got a wonderful set of programs. So we're going to Singapore in November, New York in February, and we're running a big global summit in London on March 9th. Want to see you all there.
Fantastic. Claire Cochran with Innovate Finance. Thanks for joining Breaking Banks. And we'll get you back on the show in a few weeks to tell us a bit more about how things are going.
Thanks so much. Pleasure. Looking forward to it.
So we're with Colin Kerr, the Director of Worldwide Banking for Microsoft at Sibos. Colin, what are the themes for Microsoft this year at Sibos?
So first of all, it's great to be here, Brett. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. You know, Microsoft, we're now a cloud and mobile first company, and we see that translated into our messaging and our solutions focus for financial services as well. So when you think about emerging markets and emerging economies in particular, where, you know, in Africa, perhaps only 30% of people are banked, we have to change the way that we have to change the underlying cost structure for delivering banking services. And so we really believe the cloud as an ultra-low-cost platform to deliver services like microfinance, as we've been doing with Temenos in Nigeria and in Kenya and in Mexico, is really revolutionizing the delivery of banking experiences.
I recently read a Reddit exchange where Bill Gates had talked about the fact that there were already 9 countries in Africa where there were more mobile money accounts than traditional bank accounts. So with the emergence of these low-cost devices and this change the way we're engaging the unbanked, what does this mean for the future of Microsoft in these developing economies?
So absolutely. I think low-cost devices from companies like Nokia or companies like Huawei, definitely creating mass democratization of mobile devices, if you like, and the availability of those. You know, we launched the Microsoft for Africa initiative about 18 months ago, really to jumpstart and incubate businesses in Africa using the cloud and mobile devices to help bring those together. And I think that's a natural confluence for financial services. You know, when you think about the ultra-low-cost platform and the ability to consume banking or payment services on those low-cost devices, I think it really sets up those local communities for success.
So at Cyburst this week, there's been a lot of talk about innovation and disruption. Do you think we've finally turned the corner and innovation is on the top of mind
the senior executives in the banking industry?
I absolutely think we've turned the corner. I've had more discussions at this Cyburst than any previous ones about the level of investment people are making, both in consumer banking, but also corporate banking innovation too.
I wanted to go back to some research that you guys did a while back. It was actually in 2005. I don't remember. There was a Future of Banking video that Microsoft did showing some interactions on a smartphone, paying in a taxi and going to a bank branch and interacting there. It seems you guys got that right in terms of paying in a taxi, but you missed the fact that paying on a smartphone would actually disrupt the taxi industry as well.
Well, that's absolutely true. I think what we look at now is not just payments for payment's sake, but we're talking about whole new forms of commerce. And I think even when you look at banking and the way they think about the payment experience, the leading banks are recognizing that it's about a commerce experience. People want to go shopping. They need to pay for taxi rides. But what is the most seamless way to do that? And a bank just happens to be a piece of that infrastructure.
Colin Kerr from Microsoft, thanks for joining Breaking Banks today.
Great to be here. Thank you, Brett.
Let's have a quick break and we'll come back with some more great content live from InnerTribe Boston, Cyburst 2014.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin', a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin' app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's M-O-V-E-N.com.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Right, we're back from the break. You're with Brett King. This is Breaking Banks, of course. We're live from Boston, InnerTribe, this week. One of the highlights of the session at InnerTribe on Tuesday evening was the exclusive premiere of a new movie, The Rise and Rise of Bitcoin. And we got a chance to talk to the star and one of the producers of that show, Dan Emross. Dan, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So tell us about the, for those people who haven't seen the movie, tell us about the movie. And I know your brother is in Zurich at the moment launching the movie, but tell us about what inspired you to make the movie and what's happening with it right now.
I've been very involved in Bitcoin since 2011, and there were always a lot of kind of crazy, interesting stories happening, and I was telling my brother about them all the time. And he thought they were interesting enough that maybe he should start shooting some film and kind of getting some of it recorded. And we decided to make a small documentary initially just to help educate people about Bitcoin. It was always very frustrating to kind of explain it to people because it's a fairly complicated topic. And so we started filming and started getting some interviews going. And, you know, just as we were getting into the swing of things, Bitcoin itself really started to take off. And some of the little startups that we were filming found that, you know, overnight their businesses all of a sudden were, you know, growing huge. So at that point in time, we kind of decided to double down and get some more people on the team and kind of go from there. And it's been a pretty wild ride, but now we have this film and we're really glad that it's finally going to be released.
Film's fantastic, by the way, and I like that, you know, there's a bit of a personal touch to it. You started off doing Bitcoin mining, is that correct?
Yeah, initially I got into Bitcoin and, you know, I read all about it and I was fascinated with the technology and I wanted to be part of it. And, you know, mining was a way that you could directly contribute. So early on, you know, I took all the computers in my house and started mining Bitcoins and helping the network process transactions. And from there, my obsession grew much bigger.
What about the process of this doing this movie? Do you personally sort of most identify with, or was the most aha moment that you had through the process?
Realizing how big Bitcoin was, oftentimes we always used to predict, you know, oh, what if, you know, 5 years from now, Bitcoins are trading for $100 or something. Meeting all these different people and starting to see all the different angles and all the different reasons why people were interested into Bitcoin, that was kind of really eye-opening. You know, I was looking at it primarily as a protocol, as a technology, but then, you know, we started seeing people who were using it to send money home overseas, and, you know, other people were using it, just for speculating and for day trading. So starting to see all the different uses that are out there for it really was an eye-opening experience.
I noticed in, you know, there was one of the dichotomies of the film was the challenge with the regulatory environment, whether it was accepted, you know, how it was perceived by governments, the whole Silk Road issue. Do you think that some regulation is important for the continued growth of Bitcoin?
Yes. I mean, really that kind of goes based on who we want to be using Bitcoin in the future. Without regulation, Bitcoin will remain kind of a fringe thing that's just used by geeks and people who want to, you know, not participate in the systems that are there. And that's kind of some of the early adopters and some of the early push for Bitcoin was, you know, the libertarian movement and people with those beliefs. But for Bitcoin to now be accepted for, you know, payments for big companies like PayPal and, you know, for Wall Street and Silicon Valley to really get on board, absolutely regulations are necessary, if anything, to get the banks involved as well.
Fantastic. So just in closing, fantastic movie. I loved it. And I was surprised to see, my book made a sneak product placement in the movie with Charlie Shrem from BitInstant. But just in closing, how can people find out about the movie? Where can they go to watch it and contribute to what you guys have done?
Thank you. Our website is bitcoindoc.com, D-O-C. And the film is available for pre-order right now on iTunes, and it will be streaming on Vimeo as well. The release date is October 10th. If you go to our website, we have a few theatrical releases prior to that, so if you want to see it on the big screen, we have screenings in Cleveland and in LA and in Pittsburgh. But other than that, it'll be available on October 10th, bitcoindoc.com.
And on iTunes. And just give a quick shout out to your brother who's in Zurich at the film festival launching the movie this week.
I will. Hey, Nick, I hope you're doing well out there. We're doing well here. Had a great reception, so I wish you could be here.
That was Dan Ross, one of the creators of the documentary around Bitcoin called The Rise and Rise of Bitcoin. Thanks very much for joining Breaking Banks, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me.
One of the other features of InnerTribe this week has been the startup competition. InnerTribe has a long history of sponsoring startups and early stage and growth stage entrepreneurs in their efforts. So at this point, I'd like to welcome James Lloyd. He's the head of product for Advanced Merchant Payments, which is one of the growth stage companies at the InnerTribe Startup Challenge this year. James, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thanks, Brett. Firstly, big fan of the show, so thank you for having us on. As you say, we're competing as a growth stage innovator here at Sibos as part of the InnerTribe Challenge. Our focus is on enabling banks to lend to underserved small business customers.
So what does the InnerTribe Challenge mean for you guys as a company? What opportunities does it open up for you, and what do you think it will do to improve the profile or help the company?
So we see it really as a point of concentration. We've got some really excellent potential funders in the room, some obviously banks in terms of potential partners. Frankly, at this stage, we've already won. We've got a couple of things which we would hope to announce in the near future that have come directly off the back of InnerTribe. So it's been a fantastic experience for us.
Now, being that this challenge is global, where are you guys based?
So our headquarters is Hong Kong. That's where the management team is based. We have offices, sales offices in Singapore and the Philippines, and we've recently opened an office in Level 39 in London.
So James, what are you guys working on right now that you can talk about?
Well, we're very focused on banks. We've got a bank-centric proposition. And we're looking to close a couple of deals in that space in the foreseeable future. One thing we can talk about is we're currently a member of the Accenture FinTech Innovation Lab out in Asia, where they've established, or they've 10 very credible FIs as part of that program, and we're looking to do something with that.
Thank you, James Lloyd, the head of product at Advanced Merchant Payments, one of the finalists in this year's growth stage of the InnerTribe Challenge. We're here with Emmanuel Marot, who is from Lending Robot, one of the finalists in the InnerTribe Challenge this year in the startup category.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me about Lending Robot, what the business is, and when you were founded.
So Lending Robot automates investment in peer lending, also called internet-enabled lending. We started a company in 2012, and we released the first version of Lending Robot, private beta, exactly 1 year ago.
Where is Lending Robot based and focused on? Which market?
We are currently located in Seattle, and we serve all of the U.S. Because the platform, the marketplaces we do support, LendingClub and Prosper, are all across the U.S.
Okay, so LendingClub and Prosper are your clients?
They are not our clients. Our clients are people willing to invest in peer lending, and what we do is we automate their investment, so it saves time for them, it simplifies investing, and hopefully we can bring them better returns.
Could you tell us a bit more about how a potential investor will use Lending Robot? What's the interface? How do they use Lending Robot as a platform for investing?
Excellent question. My background is in user experience, so we spend a lot of time to make the use of Lending Robot super, super simple. What people will do is they put their money in a marketplace such as LendingClub and Prosper, and then they will come to Lending Robot, give us access to their accounts so we can automatically invest on their behalf. Some of them wants to have some very specific criteria to select the loans. Some others actually let us pick up the loans for us. That's why we act mostly as an investment advisor.
How have you found the involvement in the InnerTribe Challenge this year, and what do you think it will do for you as a company?
It's been a great pleasure, actually, being part of InnerTribe, and it was a big surprise for us to be selected as final semi-finalists and then finalists. It brings several good connections. It brings awareness to Lending Robot, so far it's been very good.
Emmanuel Marot from Lending Robot, thanks very much for joining us on Breaking Banks today.
My pleasure.
We've got John Matonis, who's the executive director of Bitcoin Foundation. I got that right, didn't I, John?
Very glad to be here, Brett. That's correct.
Welcome back to the show, in fact. Now, we had the Future of Money session opening, and there's been a lot of talk. In fact,
the rest of the Sibos event, we've all been talking about the future of money opening session with InnerTribe, and of course you were on that. I found it interesting that there was a lot of talk about cryptocurrencies on the first day, and it's continued, but there's been a little bit of not apprehension, but a little bit of resistance from the old guard at Swift and the banks about what impact the blockchain and Bitcoin's really having on the ecosystem. Do you think that that matters, or do you think we just barrel on ahead anyway?
Well, I think that the other observation is that the regulators here seem to be outnumbered as well by the innovators, of course. And the interesting thing in presenting to bankers, I'm a former banker myself, as you know, so I'm in the 12-step program now. But the interesting thing about speaking with bankers is that they have this attitude of, should we allow Bitcoin to be coming into the bank? And I think that that's the wrong question. The question that is actually the other way around is, should Bitcoin really want to have anything to do with the banks? Because this is not really an optional question for them. It's coming, and it's coming at them strong.
Now, one thing we didn't get into last time when we had you on the show was actually the Bitcoin Foundation, which has become the mouthpiece, at least, for the Bitcoin community in a large way. But how did the Bitcoin Foundation itself come about? Because you're one of the few sort of remaining founding members.
It came about in July of 2012. We announced it in September of 2012. We do a lot of work in the standards area. The chief scientist, Gavin Andreessen, is the core developer, and we're about to even embark on a much broader project for that, which will be to create a standards body effort to formalize the specification, to make it similar to an IETF type of process.
Do you see that the Bitcoin Foundation at some point will have a role to play in sort of the marketing or branding of Bitcoin? Because I think that's one of the things where there's a component of education, if you like, about what's possible around Bitcoin, what's possible with the blockchain and so forth, that there's no systemic approach to this from a branding or a marketing perspective. Do you see that's part of the role of the foundation moving forward?
Absolutely, it's part of the role. We have an annual conference that we put on for education and promotion. Next year's conference is in May, and it's located in Hong Kong. So we're very excited about that. That'll be the third annual conference, and our events are typically the largest with the greatest number of exhibitors.
Okay, so how can someone that is interested in Bitcoin find out more information about the foundation, and what's the options in terms of joining or supporting the foundation, as you say, from a financial perspective?
Right, we have both individual memberships and we have business memberships. I would say for individuals or businesses that want to get involved, the website is bitcoinfoundation.org, and we have a London office and a Washington, D.C. office.
John Matonis, Executive Director, Bitcoin Foundation. Thank you very much for joining Breaking Banks once again.
Always a pleasure, Brett.
So to close out the show, we have actually the guy who's done all the work behind InnerTribe this week, and it's been a phenomenal show, phenomenal success, Peter Van der Aura. Thank you for joining us to close out Breaking Banks today.
My pleasure, Brett. What would you like to know about?
So, tell us about, in terms of the planning that went into this, when do you start planning for InnerTribe, and how long did it take you to put this together? Because it's been a huge show.
To be honest, I'm already working on 2015. So basically after this event, I take a couple of days off, and then I start my tour on a number of conferences, trying to get in new insights, and I try to avoid the fintech conferences, so I try to get a very broad picture of what's going on. Like, I would love to go in November to the Drucker Forum. At the same time, I'm a little bit extreme on social media, so I'm trying to follow on a daily basis something like 2,500 RSS feeds. I'm tweeting quite heavily. I get a lot of tweets that are coming back. So all that fills the funnel of IDs. And so I start with a very, very basic brain dump sheet. It's really a Word document where I make notes of, that's an interesting company, that's an interesting company, with a link of the article that I found. And somewhere around January, February, I start clustering the IDs. And around March, April, I put forward the sort of first outline of what a program of the week could look like. And once we have that, then we are engaging really with the speakers who almost are confirmed already at that moment.
So just in the last 30 seconds or so as we close out the show, what's been the big highlight for you? What's been the most memorable moment of Inner Tribe at Cybos 2014?
There are two moments. There was obviously the first session of the week, The Future of Money, which is a success session every year. But this year we had 360 people, standing room only. Really, we had to refuse people. And we were really hitting now for the first time that an InnoTrap session has more attendees than any other Cybos session. Mm. Yeah. The other highlight for me was Haydn Shognessy. Today, he gave a fantastic insight in what are the innovation capabilities that financial services companies have to acquire. And what I really like about his research is that we are now comparing financial services companies with other industries. So it's not good enough anymore to compare with your other peers in the financial industry, because then you end up with something very mediocre. You really have to look for the potential that your company has. So if you compare your platform readiness with, for example, Netflix or Amazon, that's a completely different story.
Peter van der Aure, the architect of InnoTribe, congratulations on a wonderful show, fantastic show. The hard work paid off. We're grateful for your support, and thanks for joining Breaking Banks and letting us be a part of InnoTribe as well this year.
Wonderful. My pleasure. Thank you, Brett.
Well, that's a wrap for InnoTribe again this year at Boston, Cybos 2014, a fantastic event. Thanks to Peter and his team and Fabian and the team, and of course Gottfried as well from Swift, for a fantastic event. We've enjoyed it very much. There's been a lot of fintech news. I hope you guys have enjoyed this exclusive glimpse into InnoTribe live from Boston on Breaking Banks. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week, of course. Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.